Hi, malt friends. This is Jamie,
and it is Monday evening, and believe it or not, I'm looking out the window, and it is snowing in May, which is fitting because I'm sitting down to read and record the final chapters of Avalanche. So if you remember, at the end of chapter 7, Ashley fell asleep, and she was trying to figure out how her and Ryan could get back to the main trail, but she was kind of racking her brain over how to walk on the snow without falling through. And then she ended up falling asleep. They were in their snow cave, and when they woke up, the candle had gone out, and they were pretty cold, and that's about where we left off. So we're about to get started on chapter 8. Oh, also, if you remember correctly, when Ryan woke up from his nap, his feet were freezing cold. Okay, here we go. Chapter 8. "What?" I cried. I helped Ryan unbuckle his boots. With growing panic, I noticed that his right boot was broken and split open. Ryan ripped the boot off his foot, and my stomach rolled to see that it was full of ice inside. Ryan's socks were wet. He peeled off his socks, and we both stared at his waxy white feet. The baby toe on his right foot looked fake, like a mannequin's toe. It looked like the worst frostbite I'd ever seen. Why hadn't I checked his feet instead of being so concerned with my knee? I should have had him dry out his socks. I should have at least noticed that his ski boot was broken. Why didn't I take care of my brother? "What happened?" Ryan cried. "Where are we? Where's Mom?" He struggled to rise, his legs tangling in his blanket. If you remember, they slept in their emergency blankets. When he leapt up, his head crashed into the snow ceiling and he collapsed. His bare feet skidded in the tree boughs. I took hold of him until he settled. The contact made me feel better, too. Ryan was himself again. Tears of relief squeezed out of my eyes. He panted when I told him the story. I explained to him how we built the snow cave after the avalanche. He remembered having lunch on the trail the afternoon before, but nothing later. While we talked, I pulled off my socks and helped him put them on over his cold, hard feet. The lump on his head had gone down, leaving a bluish bruise. "I wish I had spare socks in my backpack, not just gloves," I said. I ripped open my backpack with the knife and sliced two pieces of material from its side to wrap my feet in before jamming them into my boots. Mine were warm and dry, but too small for Ryan's feet. I busied myself opening the door of the cave and made sure I grabbed everything to take with us. I couldn't quite look at Ryan yet. How could I have forgotten his feet? I felt so guilty. We had to get out of here. He needed to get his feet warm and have his head checked. Maybe the cold last night was good for his brain, but it was not good for the rest of him. Once we were outside, Ryan pulled out the map from his pocket, and we both looked up the mountain. The sky was pink and getting lighter every moment. The air felt morning chilled. Everything was quiet and still in the forest around us, as if it was on pause. "Do you know where the snowmobile trail is?" I asked Ryan. He looked at the map, sulking. "Here," he said, pointing. "Obviously, but look where we are." He gestured around us, trying to move in the deep snow. "We'll never make it up the mountain. With our skis, we'll just sink into the snow. I can't even walk." Ryan slumped onto his knees, still grasping the map. "You can't give up," I said. "Come on, we can make snowshoes, and we can walk on the snow like wolverines." Ryan sniffed. He was tearing up. He looked around at the trees. "Maybe if we made a frame, then use the tree boughs from the cave." "That's it, yes, let's figure it out. How do we make them, Rye?" A sense of gratitude washed over me at his interest. I couldn't do this alone. Ryan pocketed the map and got up. He began to totter around in the deep snow, pulling at the branches. I had thought his mind was back to normal, but now I saw he still wasn't himself. He was easily guided. My hands shook as I made another fire. I set the bottle by the fire to melt more water. We'd need to drink enough if we were going to make it out of here today. We needed food, too, and I felt weak and empty. Ryan sat beside me with two pieces of straight branches. He used the duct tape from the pack to tape the ends together. They formed a V,
about as long as the distance from my waist to the top of my head. He muttered to himself as he studied what he'd made, then tapped a shorter branch to join the two pieces across from what looked like a triangle. He bent over his project with full concentration. It made me feel calmer to see him focused. He cut two smaller branches to reach across the V in the middle, like an equal sign. "This is where your boots rest," he explained, pointing to the equal sign. "We'll fill up the empty space with tree boughs to keep us up. Just like a wolverine paw, see? We'll use my rope to tie it on." His face was determined. He looked for the moment as if he had forgotten about his frozen feet and where we were. I was glad. It made me afraid when he was afraid, because his emotions always photocopied to me. We sat by the fire side by side, weaving tree boughs into the frames. Once I sat down, I could hear my belly. Gnawing hunger made my stomach so hollow I felt sick. I couldn't remember ever feeling this hungry. I rubbed my belly and shivered, wishing for a big bowl of Cheerios with hot buttered toast and gobs of raspberry jam. But I needed to forget about all of that and think about getting up the mountain. How was I going to walk with my injured knee? "I'm starving," Ryan said. "I don't have anything to eat," I said softly. "But when we make it up the trail, we can eat whatever we want." "Donuts?" Ryan asked. "With cream inside," I said. We tied our boots to the cross pieces so that the triangle was upside down with the pointy part behind the boot. The snowshoe looked like fuzzy slippers, the way pine needles stuck out all shaggy around my feet. I took a faltering step. Pain stabbed my knee, but I tried not to let Ryan see. He shuffled behind. I gathered our equipment and stuffed it in the one remaining backpack that I hadn't torn up. Ryan grabbed his ski pole, and we started up the mountain. Chapter 9. My boots punched through the top layer of snow, but the bushy branches I wore stopped them from sinking further. "The snowshoes are working," I said. They weren't easy to walk in, and they looked funny. My ski boots were also awkward, but they flexed. Slender branches of needles bounced with each step. The V of the snowshoes trailed behind me. My feet were cold. They rubbed in the hard backpack material, but at least they weren't bare in my ski boots. Worse was my knee. It felt like it was on fire. I wondered if I should use more tape and make the brace stronger, but I didn't want to cut off the circulation. Plus, there was no time to stop. I focused on putting one foot in front of the other. "Ash," Ryan said quietly. I turned to see his face drain of color. He pointed. That's when I saw the bear. We watched it, a large brown hulk against the snow far above us. "Is it looking at us?" I asked. "Did it see us?" "Why is it on the mountain? Aren't bears supposed to be hibernating?" "They come out of their dens by April," Ryan said. "It is April." It will be next week," I said, disheartened that Ryan was still not okay. I needed him to be okay. "Look," I said, pointing to the bear, making its way to the distant trees with an unmistakable, grisly saunter. "It's gone now." The bear had moved on. I hoped that was the last we would see of it. We put our heads down and began the ascent back up toward the trail. Ryan struggled behind me, using his pole for balance. We had no energy to speak. We needed every bit of it to keep moving upward. He let out a soft cry with each step. A large bird soared in lazy circles above us. We could see the peak of Colt Summit clearly today, without the falling snow. Jagged brown cliffs topped with heaps of pure white. My foot slipped, and I focused my gaze back onto what was in front of me. Stepping, then flicking the snow off the snowshoe with a jerk of my ankle. Step, flick.
Step, flick.
After nearly an hour of work, we were only halfway up the path. The avalanche had carried us down. Ryan collapsed in a heap. "It's no use. I can't walk," he wailed. I'd never seen Ryan give up. It scared me more than anything. I looked around desperately. We were in the midst of an avalanche debris. Trees and rocks and chunks of ice stuck out all over the snow. My knee throbbed hot. Ryan sat in the snow, crying and shivering. Get up, I said. Come on, you can do it. I grabbed the back of his jacket and tried dragging him. I slipped and fell on my hip. Then I held on to the ski pole, balanced myself, and grabbed him again. I hauled on his dead weight as hard as I could. He didn't budge. How were we going to make it? My legs folded and I sank into a heap next to him. I couldn't do this anymore. I wanted my parents here. I wanted Ryan to tell me it was okay and to get up and carry me the rest of the way. I wanted to be home, wrapped in a blanket on the couch with my cat, Tiger. Have her purr on my lap and stretch her claws rhythmically. The wind brought a cold draft down the mountain. The sky was clear blue now, sun shining. It bounced off the snow, making me squint with watery eyes. After all we'd been through, surviving an avalanche and a night in the ravine, we were going to die anyway, trying to climb back up. No one would know what had happened to us. I rubbed my knee. Ryan wouldn't walk, and I couldn't drag him. I glanced up, and I saw the bear again. Still up the mountain, but closer. Ryan, that grizzly is back, I whispered. My heart pounded. It was stalking us. We were being stalked by a hungry grizzly bear that had just come out of its den. Even if I could run, there was nowhere to go. My eyes darted around, and then I saw something else. A dark, shaggy animal was digging in the debris behind us. Its head was broad, with round, short ears. A thick, yellowish stripe ran along its side from its shoulders all the way to its bushy tail. As I watched, it dug down with long claws and began to pull something out from beneath the snow. I got Ryan's attention and gestured to the animal.
Wolverine,
he whispered hoarsely. We watched it fiercely tug at the back end of some dead animal with hooves and light brown hair. I couldn't tell what it was, but the carcass was bigger than the wolverine. We were so focused on the wolverine that we didn't see the bear until it was nearly on top of us.